it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day. Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's happening, guys? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. It's Mike and Darius today, fresh off of the big victory over the Atlanta Hawks in terms of point differential. The Lakers were all over the Hawks after a rough first 2 minutes. They went on a blitzkrieg for the rest of the first quarter and hit a bunch of shots, had a bunch of assists. The energy was excellent. And Darius, I found myself, well, you guys wouldn't respond to this in the text thread, but I found myself bemoaning where this level of energy and downhill action to the rim was against the Kings specifically. I will spare you of that again. Clearly, you didn't want to answer. Maybe you just didn't want to light that, put any more gasoline on that fire and wanted to focus on the game itself. But it's like doing all the standings we've done. And these wins over the Hawks and the Timberwolves and the Bucks, right? But just not the teams right in front of them or behind them in the standings. So those are the two thoughts that I had. One, they played very well and absolutely crushed Atlanta in many ways. And then B, man, a lot of that energy level wasn't there to the same degree against the Kings in those two games.
Yeah, we got a lamenting mic last night about what could have been. Believe me, Mike, I had some of that same. And the NBA, you've seen enough NBA and been around the league and been around so many different players. There's probably no one who understands better than you the ebbs and flows of a season and how on some nights, even on the nights where you really want guys to have it, they don't. That last game against the Kings especially felt like one of those games. And it's hard to square that then when you see them come out and play the way that they did against Atlanta, and even in LeBron's case, the way he played against the Warriors just a couple of nights ago. I was the one lamenting like AD going out, because I thought he would have made the difference in the Lakers getting that win with the way that LeBron was playing.
Right, and that was just unlucky, right? I'm more talking about, and you would agree, is I'm sure, just the stuff that you can control. Right. And and that's the part. But I've already steered us off course. So why were they so good against Atlanta? And does this, like, the confusing part, and this is where I think you were getting to. Usually we can have a pretty good idea of how the team's going to play on a given night when it's a team that you watch every night. Hell, you can do the same thing about the Warriors. I know that's on in the house a lot. Like, there are certain teams that I follow more closely even than some others. Like, I could probably tell you how the Timberwolves are going to do on a given night, but we do get surprised sometimes. That's part of the fun. And the Lakers have 13 games left, Darius. So what they did against Atlanta, the weight, the thrust that they had, the energy that they had, the execution that they had, how do you then gauge what that can portend for the rest of the season?
Against the Hawks, I thought LeBron and AD really led the way with their spirit and their general verve. And that's the second straight game that LeBron has been like that after what was sort of a letdown against the Kings, although he did close that game with a certain amount of force. And so I was going to ask you about this. It feels like LeBron is in go mode. I don't know what this is going to mean for the standings, and we're going to get into the standing stuff at the end of the pod. I think LeBron sees the finish line for the regular season now, and this is year six of LeBron, Mike. And so we have a pretty good idea now about how he tries to work his way through a season, particularly a season where now he's been mostly healthy.
And you really can't say that for his other Laker seasons. He's mostly been a 55 to 65 game player for the Lakers. And he's already played 60 games with 13 games left. And so this looks to me like a player who understands that now he is in higher level regular season mode. Not, he's not in playoff mode yet, but he is in these regular season games matter mode. And that's the level that he was playing at the last couple of games to my eyes. And I'm wondering what your thought is on LeBron specifically with under 15 games left in the regular season now. And if you see not necessarily a switch being flipped, but if you see the difference.
Well, that's why I don't understand the Kings game, right? That was the game to start that ramp up. And I think that, you know, part of it was that maybe he was sick, but, you know, it was 6 for 16, 18 points in 40 minutes, 5 turnovers. You know, that was far from the LeBron that we saw against Golden State in Atlanta, who was totally dominant, was getting downhill, was just shedding bodies on his way to the hoop. And Sacramento doesn't have one of the few guys in the NBA that could actually impede that when he's in the mood. You know, who does? Denver, like Aaron Gordon with Jokic waiting.
Yeah. I want to talk about this within the context of LeBron specifically, because there has been a lot of talk nationally. The shift in points of emphasis for the referees and the amount of perimeter contact that is being allowed. And I'm wondering if you've noticed any difference in how LeBron is attacking going downhill these last couple of games, knowing that there's more contact being allowed in both directions. Because when you use the word shedding, that's exactly what he's doing to these defenders. And I feel like there's been, watching games around the league, there has been more physicality allowed on the perimeter. And defenders are responding in kind. They're like, you're going to let me bump these guys. You're going to let me hold a little bit more. You're going to let me impede progress.
Then I'm going to do it until you call a foul.
And LeBron is like, oh, you want to try to impede my progress? I'm going to knock you off on these drives and get right to the basket. And so I'm wondering if you think this could actually serve as a bit of an advantage for LeBron on most nights. And if, because that's what it looked like to me, particularly against the Warriors and against the Hawks, there was a drive he had against the Warriors that Lakers social highlighted where he basically just went right through Andrew Wiggins, who is not a small human being. And against the Hawks, he did that several times against multiple players where he just stuck his shoulder right into a guy, right in the, put him right in the sidecar and took that guy right to the basket with him. And so that's what I'm seeing from LeBron. It's a re-engagement in the physicality, the on-ball physicality that has made him the player that he's been for most of his career.
Yeah, so that's for sure a part of it. And I do think that that's, forget all the King stuff now. Okay, that's in the past. I've talked about it enough. The Lakers have these 13 games coming up. And I think the other thing that's helped towards this end, towards LeBron and the physicality and the getting downhill, is that the Lakers have finally had a light schedule in terms of amount of games per week. That things have just lessened, where the Lakers now don't play Philly until Friday. And so that means today, fully off, Wednesday, light day, Thursday, get back to work day. And that's huge. That's like what happens in the Western Conference first round, where the schedule gets elongated because all these teams are playing and you find yourself with X amount of games between games. Days between games. That's a big thing for LeBron. And I also thought that was a big thing for AD, who is tired. And there's one other player who I think will benefit from this, and we'll get to that in the next segment. But so for LeBron, he only takes 14 shots against the Hawks, but hits 10 of them. The threes have been super consistent. Everyone looks good. Even the ones that he misses seem to be going in and out right now. He's got that kind of locked in. The assist to turnovers were 10 to 2 for him. He was a plus 20. You know, everything looked pretty easy. And, you know, Atlanta is a team where they do have Jalen Johnson, who was great in his own right. But for as physical as he is, he doesn't have the tricks or he doesn't know the tricks that LeBron has, the old man game stuff, the stuff that I've told this story, and I'll do a very brief version of it. But when I played one-on-one against Teresa Edwards, a WNBA and Team USA Hall of Famer, four-time Olympic gold medalist, and kind of learned for the first time what somebody that really knew the tricks of the trade could do with leverage and with hand positioning and with body positioning. And LeBron just caught Johnson a couple times on stuff like that, where he was like, oh, okay, I'm going to go straight up against LeBron, like use this crazy athleticism that had him just completely destroy Reeves in the first Atlanta play of the game. And so LeBron can do that against somebody of his size, and everybody else, he's just shedding, like, you know, Bogdanovich or whoever ended up, DeAndre Hunter, whoever got over on him. And that was kind of, that's what I think we will see more against Indiana, against Philly, shorthanded. So there are, this pathway is there, I think, for LeBron to stay on this course. AD coming along with him, that's great. Hachimura has really settled in to a specific scoring role where teams do not have the horses to keep up with him. Russell, other than the the Sacramento game, has really continued to find his touch. There's one thing that can disrupt it. And there's one player who I haven't mentioned yet that we're going to get to after the break that I want to buy all of the remaining stock in if people are selling. So let's do this after a brief break.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This might seem like a random topic at this point of the season, and it is to an extent, but I was talking to a few people around the arena and just have been kind of paying attention to what, like what's been going on with this player throughout the season. And that player is Austin Reeves. I think that Austin, who this will be kind of the key part of this series, he is the only Laker that has played every game. He is, it's not something that's been discussed, but in the modern NBA, there are only so many guys that actually play every night and play real minutes. And I think that Austin all season has looked some degree of fatigued at trying to figure out how to get his body ready every night when a lot of guys, again, are not playing every night. Even if they're missing five games like Anthony Davis, those five games seem to have made somewhat of a difference. But so Austin didn't play a lot his rookie year. His second year, he doesn't play a lot early in the year and then ramps up. And then his third year goes on this deep run and is a key player whose minutes go up every single round as the competition gets higher and higher and higher. And he hits that fatigue wall at the end of the Memphis series, kind of breaks through midway through the Golden State series, is excellent against Denver. Then he just is, his body is basically exhausted, so he has to take some time. Then Team USA ramps up. And he's got to get his body up to that playoff level intensity again before it's ready to start what it typically would in the fall. Like he's doing this in the summer. So then when he's got his body up to that level, he takes another kind of crash and a couple of weeks off. And then the NBA season starts. And then he's trying to get his body back up to where it was in the playoffs. But it's not quite there yet, especially relative to all the other players that have had a typical offseason. And I think this pattern, Darius, has kind of gone throughout the season, where at times he's able to find somewhat of a physical element in a win. But I think you had mentioned the stat earlier. He's been missing wide open threes. He has been not the same player defensively that he was last year. And I think those are directly assigned to the fatigue level, let alone kind of, you know, playing with a smaller backcourt. And so that I wanted to just introduce that idea, see what you thought of it. And because of this, that's why I want the stock for Austin, because I think that this next offseason, he's going to get his body more in line is as to what the clock is, like the circadian rhythm, like all that to the NBA season. And it's just something that struck out to me as we talk about all these players missing games. And then like, oh, you know, who hasn't missed any time? Austin Reeves.
Mike, it's a great point. I was just looking at Austin's basketball reference page. Austin played 1,400 minutes as a rookie, and he played about 1,800 minutes as a second-year player. And then in the playoffs, he played almost 600 more minutes. So last season, he played a little bit over 2,400 minutes total, regular season and playoffs. This season, he's already played more games than what he played last season total. So last season, he played in 64 regular season games. He's already played in 69 games this season. And he's already at almost 2,200 minutes, Mike. He's at 2,188. And so that's already 300 more full regular season minutes than he played all of last season, with 13 games left to go. And he's only a couple of hundred minutes behind the entire season, including playoffs. And Austin is a player that, in order to even be an NBA player, he has to play harder, I think, than your average NBA player who is a better athlete than he is. And so they're hard minutes for him, I guess, is the best way to explain it. And the asks on him this year have been a bit different. So look at the last string of opponents, Mike, and look who Austin Reeves has been asked to defend. So last night, his primary defensive assignment was DeJounte Murray. And he basically guarded Murray. Whenever both team starters were on the court, Austin was on Murray. Murray is their best offensive wing. And against the Warriors, he was guarding Steph Curry. Against the Kings, he was guarding De'Aaron Fox. It's because the Lakers don't have that other dynamic perimeter defensive player. And so they are slotting everyone appropriately. Austin is the best player to put on these guys. In an ideal world, if you give Austin the truth serum, you don't even probably need to give him the truth serum. Just ask him in a post-game press conference, and he'll probably be honest with you about how much of a challenge those matchups are for him. But I bet he'd prefer not to have to guard the other team's best perimeter talent. The fact that Austin isn't as active defensively and doing all of the little things defensively, he has a big ask most nights defensively. And offensively, I've actually liked the way that he's come around. I wish there was a little bit more consistency in his shot making.
Well, that's the shot making to me. It's basically the threes, right? Because isn't he shooting? I think he's like seventh in the NBA in 2-point percentage.
Yeah.
Or layup, maybe it's layups, or one of the two. And last year he was first. So he's still, his skill bag is so high that he's still so good in those areas with all those little touch shots. But the leg shots to me are what has not been there consistently. And that's related to all this conversation.
Yeah. And so the thing is too, for Austin, is I think that he's a high level shot maker and not necessarily a high level shooter. And so D'Lo to me is more of a pure shooter than Austin Reeves is. And if you give those two players the same exact shots, I expect D'Lo shots to go in at a higher clip just because I think that he's a better shooter. To me, Austin is never going to be like a 42 or 43% three-point shooter. I don't think he's that quality a shooter. I think he can hit that on open threes, potentially. But even then, he seems more like a rhythm, like, I shoot off the dribble a little bit better. I've really liked the way that he walks in to threes rather than when he's always just spotting up. And some nights his jumper is just on and some nights it's just off. And there's no rhyme or reason to it to me beyond the fact that it could just be that on some nights his legs aren't all of the way there. And that's going to go back to him having bigger asks defensively as much as anything else. What I will say about Austin, Mike, is that the way that he has
really found his understanding of how to operate within the offense. That's what has been most encouraging to me about the way that his season is progressing. Austin's second half of the season has been so good, or he's played at such a good level that he's basically made everyone forget about his early season struggles. And that to me is indicative of why you would want to buy all of the stock in Austin Reeves, Mike. And just so you know, you could buy stock from other places. You're not getting my Austin Reeves stock. Sorry.
All right. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. The only thing I would add about the shooting, like I remember talking to some of the scouts just when, you know, I had never heard of him and like, hey, like this dude, Austin Reeves coming in, he's pretty good. And so I pull up his basketball reference page from college and I was like, well, his 3-point percentage isn't great, especially in Oklahoma. It was better at Wichita State. And the way it was explained to me was, so when Austin was doing more spotting up, like at Wichita State, and he can absolutely do that. And he is a pure shooter. Like I watched he and D'Lo warm up together. And there's nobody that warms up to the level of Steph and Clay, but they have a similar shooting time of Austin and D'Lo. So there a lot of times the four of them, when the Lakers play the Warriors, are on the court together. And I'll just say it's the fewest collective misses that I've ever seen of any four players doing their pregame shooting. So it's not like Austin's out there when he's warming up, he's not missing much. Like he really is a professional shooter. Like I think he absolutely could shoot into the 40s, but, and this is what, again, going back to what happened in Oklahoma, and this is the difference between like Steph Curry and Austin Reeves, when you increase the volume, but also the usage of other things that he's supposed to do. And part of it is what you talked about with the defense and how he's got to, when, especially with T-Lo as his backcourt partner, he's got to take on a challenge that more often than not is a bigger or faster or something physical advantage guy every night on one end. So that's one thing that's going to stop him. And B, where he emerged last year was all of his on the ball stuff and his creation and running screen roll with LeBron or even setting a screen for LeBron. And so all of the, it's because Austin can do a lot of that other stuff and because he can at least hang in chasing guys around screens, you know, which is not something that D'Lo is going to do as much. Although, you know, sometimes that to me is another thing where I'm curious, just if you fast forwarded 5 years and you did put ideal personnel around Reeves and he did get physically stronger, you know, like Steph has, and he did kind of figure out his offseason to the point to steal his body, and he got on the LeBron core strength plan, you know, all of these things, then I'd be curious where the 3-point percentage would go as his career continued to go on. But that's, I think, enough Austin for now. I just wanted to put that out there and just have it be something that we're thinking about when considering his season as a whole.
Yeah, and to your point about the number of games the Lakers have played of late, only 5 games over the course of 14 calendar days, with accounting for the Philly game that's going to be this Friday, Mike. And that, to me, is a perfect time, both for all of the players who are a little bit banged up or have been playing a lot of minutes, LeBron and AD especially, but Austin Reeves as well, for all of them to sort of settle in and find a little bit of reprieve, right? And then make the push towards the end of the season that they need to in order to try to get to the place in the standings that they will need some help to get to, but is still not out of reach. And so with that, let's take a break. And on the other end, I do want to dive into the standings again, because every day is standings watch at this stage of the season. So, Mike, we had our calculators out before the pod, and we were talking about a variety of scenarios. And so what's at the top of your mind when you think about the standings and the Lakers and what their best case scenario is or what they should be pushing for?
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's far from ideal as to where it could have been even a week or two ago. And I'll try to explain simply as to why. So just thinking about the Phoenix Suns at this point, and Darius had circled the Suns in part due to their schedule and in part due to just their play has slipped some, even though they've been largely healthy. lately. They just lost their most recent game. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They're still 39-29. So that's three games ahead of the Lakers in the loss column, like 2.5 overall. So this is where you get into the part of the season where if the Lakers go blank, then they need opposing teams to go blank. And there's like this pie chart that I'll start to keep. It's not quite as extensive as Pete's lineup sheets, for example, but it's there. So here's the short of it. If the Lakers go 9-4, and Darius and I did parcel through the schedule, and that's within reason for them to go 9-4, especially if they're pushing, especially if LeBron is playing like he's playing right now. Not easy, but if they go 9-4, the Lakers would need the Suns to go 7-7. And that's where it becomes the, man, I mean, there are 10 games over 500 for the season. And a lot of those losses came when they didn't have one of Booker, Beal, and Durant. So forget how difficult their schedule is and all that. The Suns should be able to go 8-6, you know, they being the Suns. And so that's where, but if you're going to ask the Lakers to go 10-3, then the Suns would have to go no better than 8-6. And if you're going to ask the Lakers to go 11-2, well, damn, I mean, 11-2, the Suns could still stay ahead of them just by going 9-5. And that's where it gets dicey. Dallas is different because Dallas has the tiebreaker with the Lakers. Dallas has the same exact record as Phoenix right now. If the Lakers went 9-4, the Mavs would finish with a better record, even if they went 6-8. And I don't think they're going to go 6-8 because they have Luka. And so that puts them sort of out of play. Sacramento, who also has the tiebreaker over the Lakers, has one fewer loss even than Dallas. And so if the Lakers went 9-4, the Kings, I think, the Kings would have one more game, but they could go 6-9, I think. That I haven't done the math on that one, so but basically don't count on it. Even though everybody else in the league can beat the Kings except for the Lakers. They should have lost to Memphis at home last night. They were down 2 with like 20 seconds left, and Fox had a game-tying jumper to get them to overtime. I'm being harsh to say should have, because they did lead for most of the game. It was the typical sort of, oh, let the team back in it. But that's what they've done. All right. Anyway, let's just stick for now with what I said about Phoenix. 9-4, the Lakers would have to go in order for the Suns to go 7-7. And so you're basically just hoping every night that they get to that and that the Warriors stay. Right now, they are a game back of the Lakers. Same number of losses since they lost a home game yesterday. What do you make of that, Darius?
Forget standings, watch, look at the whole West. I'm looking at two teams. And every night the Suns play and every night the Warriors play, those are my teams of interest, right? Like, we watch a lot of Warriors in my house anyway. I'm not going to fist pump in front of my wife when the Warriors lose. But last night when I was tracking their game against the Knicks and the Knicks won, that helped the Lakers. It put the Lakers back in the night. The Lakers control their destiny against the Warriors. If the Lakers finish with the same amount of losses as the Warriors, which they currently do, so the Lakers and Warriors are currently tied in the loss column. The Lakers play the Warriors one more time. So all they have to do is beat the Warriors and have fewer losses than the Warriors the rest of the season. And they control their destiny against them. The Suns, it's not as clear. And that's why the Lakers need to root for the Suns to lose. Every single time the Suns lose, it helps the Lakers. And the Suns are the one team ahead of them that the Lakers have the tiebreak over. And so to me, that's where Lakers fans at least should be focusing all of their attention in terms of where the losses are going to come from. And I will say, we did look at the Suns' remaining schedule. The Suns have 14 games left, and based off opponent winning percentage, they have the second most difficult strength of schedule remaining, Mike. The Suns still play Denver once. They play OKC once. They play the Timberwolves twice. They play the Clippers twice. They play the Pelicans twice, and they play the Cavs. Their other three games, they play two games against the Spurs and one game against the Hawks.
One thing I'll posit within that structure, though, and I think about the same thing for when the Lakers play games. The Suns will likely need/want to win many of those games more than the teams that have the better records. And it's just something to keep in mind when you're rooting for them to lose. If the Timberwolves are Well, maybe they're not the greatest example, but they're the Timberwolves are basically locked into a top three seed. You know, what's the difference to them of being the two or the three? It just depends on who's going to be there, and they may not know, whereas Phoenix is going to desperately not want to swap places with the Lakers in the standings.
Well, what I will say, though, to Mike, is all three of those teams, Denver, OKC, and Minnesota, are also all in pursuit of potentially being the number one seed overall for the Western Conference. And I would think that, and I don't want to dive too far into this, but that could also mean something to them. And the compression of the teams at the top of both of the conferences, right? And so Cleveland, for example, is also going to be a team that's like looking to win as many games as they can to stay in the top, to try to be in the top four of the Eastern Conference. And so I agree that just like the Lakers, the Suns are going to go out there with a high amount of motivation in order to try to win these basketball games. But the other teams likely will be too. The last two, three, four games of the regular season are always, to me, a crapshoot as to what teams have in terms of a plan. Will they rest guys? The last game of the season especially is a game where what are the standings implications of a win versus a loss on the last game of the season? I think 9-4 is a realistic goal for the Lakers. I would love for them to have 9 wins before the final game of the season. So I'd love for them to be 9-3 over these next 12 games with the determining game on the final game of the season against the Pelicans. And what does that game mean? Now, 10-3, like, believe me, I'd love to go 13-0, right? I don't think that's going to happen. The Lakers have a very, I don't want to say difficult road trip coming up, but the Lakers have not been a good road team this season. And so every road trip is technically difficult for them, right? But when it comes right down to it, that at Milwaukee, at Memphis, at Indiana, at Brooklyn, at Toronto, at Washington, that's a tricky stretch, and two back-to-backs over that stretch as well. So that's where, if the Lakers are going to be a serious basketball team, Mike, that's where it's going to happen. It's going to be that final road trip of the season. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only good news is just that those teams, while it's difficult from a schedule standpoint and back-to-backs and number of games in a week, most of the teams on that road trip are not teams that are clicking on high cylinders right now and or just have the talent level and kind of the personnel. And I'm speaking a lot about like the Toronto, Brooklyn, you know, Washington, like those are three teams that the Lakers can certainly have. I think Indiana is the toughest of those, where they're going to be flying up and down and they're mad about the in-season tournament. And so I get all that. That to me is going to be a challenge. Although part of that depends on what happens in the game they play at home, because that will be the first thing on their mind. So stay tuned on that. The game that I kind of have...
They also have Siakam.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got some athletes. The Turner, right, is an actual deterrent at the rim. Halliburton, there's nobody on the Lakers to guard Halliburton. So it's a tough one. The one that I'm thinking, though, is that regular season finale against New Orleans. And I don't know that the Lakers will even be in position to take advantage of that. It just, again, depends on what Phoenix does. It depends on what Golden State does. To a much lesser extent, it depends on Dallas and if they have some sort of collapse or some sort of injury, all that. But let's say that the Lakers do need to win that Pelicans game. What you're basically putting on the table then is like three playoff type games just to get to the first round. So if they basically, let's say the Lakers need to win that Pelicans game in order to they could catch the Suns if they win it. So they're going all out in that game. Then they have to play in the 9-10 game, perhaps, if Golden State wins. And like, or even if they do get up to the 8, then they have to win that game just to get it's a lot of what you wanted, what we talked about last year, where LeBron eventually wore some by the Denver series. That to me, it's ramped up even more for this year. So in terms of like the Lakers doing any real damage in the playoffs, I think that's a super tall task. The main thing, the only thing they can think about, though, is just trying to get into a round one matchup. At this point, you have no luxury of trying to think about who it's going to be against or whatever. It's just like, can you at least give yourself a chance for some team to have to beat you four times? And to do that, I think you minimum have to win the 9 games, and you may even have to win 10.
Yep. And that's where the Lakers have put themselves in this position again. They did not dig themselves the massive hole that they dug themselves last season in terms of the schedule, Mike, but the conference is better this season. And the Kings could very well win the same number of games they won last season. And instead of being the 3 seed, they will be the 6 seed. And that's just the nature of things. And so the Lakers have a couple of days off. I hope they enjoy their time off. I'm sure the weather's nice down there in Southern California. And
always,
I hope they get their bodies right. And they will get to play a Philly team that is banged up on Friday. We will be back on Thursday. We will probably talk some Philly. We may even talk more league-wide stuff, maybe get into some all-NBA and all-defense team discussions. We'll see. But until then, we will catch you guys next time. This is Darius. That was Mike. And this is the Laker Film Room Podcast.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double team. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. With his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a 3-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it!
Bryant! Unbelievable. It's over.
And shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes!
And that was a little tough to Albert Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.